in association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sutris. Today, we welcome back Jason Aaron, the writer of Vertigo's Scalped, Marvel Comics' Ghost Rider, Wolverine Weapon X, and later this summer, Jason will be writing a one-shot featuring one of the Iron Fist Immortal Weapons, a story featuring Fat Cobra. We talk about all those projects and more in this conversation with Jason. Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where they offer a variety of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, archives, absolute editions. If it's been collected, InStock Trades has it. I shouldn't forget original graphic novels as well. All at savings of 35% off the regular cover price or more. And if you order $50 or more from InStockTrades.com of merchandise, the shipping is free. Some recent Jason Aaron product that is available at InStockTrades.com, one of the collections we talk about in our conversation. His work on Secret Invasion Black Panther, a great story. The standard retail price is $12.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $8.18. How about The Death of Wolverine premium hardcover with the movie coming out? A perfect time to order that. The standard retail price, $19.99 at InStockTrades.com, $12.59. Go back to Jason's first project for Vertigo, The Other Side, a great story with Cameron Stewart, a wonderful Vietnam story we discuss in our conversation. Standard retail price, $12.99 at InStockTrades.com, $8.18. And you'll find Scalped. Several volumes of Scalped are available at InStockTrades.com. A bargain for volume one. The standard retail price is $9.99 at InStockTrades.com, $6.29. Don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. For all your pre-order monthly needs, you will find savings from 40 to 75% off selected items. For all the details, check out their websites, Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com, InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Well, as I say, Friday is the start of the Wolverine movie, and certainly it is on Jason's mind as our conversation begins.
Can you hear this?
Oh, yeah. See, I've got claws, and I can use them. I am Wolverine.
What is that from?
This is my slash-and-action Wolverine that I bought at the toy store today.
Nice.
He's pretty awesome.
Back off, bub!
Yeah, that won't traumatize your kid.
This was not for the kid. This was totally for me. He's got like a little snake sound.
Is it Jackman talking, or is it is it a licensed product, or did you get it off a truck somewhere?
It's got like the movie. You know, it's the part of the movie tie-in stuff, but it doesn't look like Jackman, and it's not his voice.
Oh, okay, it isn't.
It's part of the It's like a big oversized figure, and it's just part of the movie tie-in stuff. But he's wearing he's got on like jeans and the black and yellow top.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And have you seen those? They have these big, kind of like the Wolverine version of the Hulk hands. They have these big retractable claws.
I kind of figured they were going to have something like that based on the success of the Hulk hands.
Yeah. You got to buy them one. You buy one hand at a time.
Do you really?
I can't get them. There's no double pack.
Are they considered legal weapons if they're sold in a pack?
They got like little nubbies on the end, so I guess you can't poke your eye out, but I'm sure it's just a matter of time before something horrible happens to some kid.
Yeah, we're taking those off the market. We're sorry about that.
Some kid's got it stuck up his nose or who knows what.
I knew we shouldn't have bought adamantium claws.
those Hulk hands I know were huge. I think they, that was like the bulk of Marvel's income for that quarter that they came out.
I am very impressed with what you've done with Wolverine so far, and have to say that I'm looking forward to what's coming. But first, I want to pause and just Wolverine 50 in particular was such a cool story. And for 22 pages, you're really, and we're seeing it in Scalp now as well, you're obviously very comfortable telling a short 22-page story. Is that correct, or do you sweat over these things? Because you do it a lot, and you do it well.
Do I sweat over it? No, I love telling the single-issue stories. I don't know, a lot of times it seems a lot easier. I mean, I like with Scalped, I like telling those single issue stories and then, you know, trying to string them together to make, still tell some sort of overall story among mm-hmm. them, like we did with Casino Boogie, the second arc or third arc of the book, and then the current arc, that's kind of what that is. I don't think people realize that from 25. You know, 25 kind of had a big cliffhanger moment that we're not coming back to, you know, for another, it's like four issues later before
we get cool.
a continuation of that cliffhanger. Because overall, you get five issues in that arc that are all standalone stories that, again, still fit together in different ways. So, you know, we just did the issue 26 was the issue that focused on Diesel and prison. And the next issue, 27, which is about to come out, focuses on Agent Nitz, who's one of the characters that we haven't previously focused on. And that kind of connects to the Diesel issue. And then the issue after that focuses on Officer Fallsdown and his continuing investigation into Gina's murder.
Okay.
And we see where that leads him. And we also finally see the full events of the day in 1975 when the two agents were murdered on the res. You know, that we flash back to that event
mm-hmm.
a lot over the course of the series, but we've never really seen, you know, who pulled the trigger. So that'll be revealed in issue 28. And then issue 29 picks up with Dash right after the end of 25 with his confrontation with the card shark.
Mm-hmm.
So again, they're, you know, they all connect together, but they're standalone stories, and they kind of set the stage for the next arc this year, which is called The Gnawing, and that'll really be a big, much more plot-driven story, some big plot events. Not all of our characters will survive that arc, and those that do will be in, some of them be in radically different places than they were at the beginning.
How do you arrive at that kind of decision in terms of, you know, a character's got to go? Is it, I've run out of things to say, or, boy, they're at a real, I mean, you know, like, I don't need to know specifics, obviously, but just, yeah, I mean, is it all organic in terms of, I got nothing left to say about this character, she's got to go, or he's got to go, or, yeah, I mean, that other possibility of, oh, you know, something, look where I've put myself, this person has to go.
Yeah, well, I think with the people who are not going to survive the year, that was kind of the plan all along. I don't think it'd be a good reason to kill somebody off just because you run out of things to say. I mean, I guess you got to do something with them if you're done with them, but kind of our whole cast of characters, they all have a grand character arc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know where they're all going to wind up. You know, some of them are going to get, you know, we'll see a lot more than others, obviously, over the course of the series, but they all kind of have their own story within the bigger story. Just some of them are going to end a lot sooner than others.
Is how much, you know, wiggle room do you give yourself within that character course plot in terms of keeping yourself interested? It's something I've asked Azzarello about before on 100 Bullets as it winds down. You know, I mean,
what did he say when you asked him that? Because that's a book that I just marvel at, the way he was able to weave all that stuff together.
Well,
over the course of 100 issues, it's just kind of mind-boggling.
Absolutely. He had said that, you know, he had general, like, touchstone moments that he, you know, could count on, but he left, you know, how to get from, you know, A to B, there's a whole subset there that he would leave blank. I mean, he was pretty general about it, but I think essentially saying that, you know, generally he knew where things were going, but he wanted to keep arcs open if something, you know, kept him interested, and he wanted to explore an idea. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're a quarter of a way, over a quarter of the way there. So, you know, how is it for you in terms of, you know, is it still interesting, or are you following, you know, the blueprint that you put out, and it's just a matter of getting the donuts out?
Yeah, well, it's definitely still interesting, but I have followed a blueprint blueprint pretty closely. Very early in the process of Scout, I'd maybe written a couple of issues. I sat down and wrote out a synopsis for the first, I think, 30 issues. Pretty detailed, a lot of scene notes and all the major beats and titles and everything. And I've stuck pretty closely to that. I think that outline of 30 issues will probably translate to about 35 issues.
Okay.
So we've had some wiggle room. Some arcs have changed a little bit, but so I'm hitting that point now where I'm at the end of my document, and I've been working on the new one because people ask, how long Scout's going to run, or do you have an issue number in mind? And I've never said, well, yeah, it's going to run 50 issues or whatever. I've never thrown out a specific issue number, but I think that original document I wrote, the point it ended was pretty much the midpoint of the story. So that could translate to 60 issues or 70 issues, whatever, more or less. I don't know, but I think this is just by the end of the year, we'll be at a major kind of demarcation point in the story of Scout, and a lot of things will be different going forward. A lot of our characters will be different. The relationships are going to be very different, so that's exciting. I don't think nothing about the book has really gotten stagnant. I mean, those 25 issues or 26 issues now went by awful fast. And I think part of it is just Gary and I have kind of put together this, big collection of characters, and we love them all so much that there's still so much more we want to explore with these characters. We haven't just been focusing on Dash for 26 issues or Red Crow or anybody that, there are still characters that I'm waiting to do spotlight issues on that we haven't got the chance to do yet. Like Shunka, who's Red Crow's right-hand man. We don't know anything about him. And the sheriff, Wooster Carnow, who's the sheriff of Whitehaven, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of stuff I want to do with him, but just haven't had a chance to do any of it yet. So still a lot of exciting stuff for Scout. And, I don't know. I mean, I might come to a point where things aren't coming as easy as they were before, and we need to wrap it up. But I don't envision getting to that point anytime soon.
Well, that's excellent, man, because, I was half teasing you. It doesn't seem like anything is boring. And it's really interesting to see the shades of different writing we're seeing from the few crime books that are out there, the few quality crime books. And for people who are listening, if you haven't picked up Scalp but do read Criminal, this is a very interesting shared experience, but very different, too, because Ed seems to be very lyric with the way he treats his characters. There's a real level of, romance that, or sentiment, that I never see in Scalped, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just think it's such an interesting read because these are just, man, I mean, this is really the underside of the underbelly of this sad reservation and these characters and Casino and everything that is involved, and I am compelled every month to pick it up and read it. It's great. It's so much fun, and I never thought I would get such interest and anticipation for the next issue for something with such a sad existence. I mean, I stay away from Oz. I stay away from stuff like that. But I really do. I enjoyed the book, and I think it is such a deep, sad story that is compelling.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I guess I realize sometimes just how, God, this is kind of depressing. but to me, I don't know. To me, it's not about, how fucking miserable can I make these characters and my readers. It's kind of just about making these characters, to me, seem real. And real to me is about those highs and lows, and about the moral ambiguity of these characters, and just showing how somebody like Red Crow can be a hero in his own mind and a hero to the world at times, but then at other times, just the most terrifying person that you would ever want to meet. And how Dash can walk the line between hero and then guy who's just an absolute rock fucking bottom.
Yeah.
And it's not the... I don't know. I guess, you know, I've been... You can, if you look online, you can find your critics of scalps who think the book caters to stereotypes or is too negative. But I don't know. I've never felt that way. I've never been ashamed of anything we've done. I'm proud of everything we've done on Scalped, and I think... I think if you look at our characters and just see stereotypes or just see negative portrayals, then you're either missing part of it or we just have different opinions on what constitutes real-life characters. To me, real-life characters are ones that walk that line of moral ambiguity, that aren't heroes in white hats and villains in black hats. You know, that to me is just, that's not real. So like you said, if anybody's a fan of Criminal and hasn't checked out Scalped, Brubaker did write the intro for the next trade that comes out later this month, the fourth volume. He wrote a great intro.
Very cool.
Of course, you know, I wrote a piece for the Back Matter and Criminal too, so it was a good trade-off.
Absolutely. Did you do a favorite film, or what was your essay about?
I wrote about several. I couldn't decide on just one, so I wrote a piece. It was about, I think I titled it like my favorite movie, Tough Guys, and something like that. So I wrote about To Live and Die in L.A.
Great movie.
Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
Awesome.
State of Grace. So like a real mix of movies.
That's very cool. We got to hunt down that issue because I have it somewhere. But, you know, that is the one thing that drives me nuts about Ed's collected trades. He leaves the back matter out. And I understand making the magazine important.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's too bad. So, I mean, there you go. Hunt for that.
Somewhere, you know, down the road, he'll do the, you know, the Criminal omnibus or, like, Criminal hardcovers or something and put that stuff in there.
Yeah, that's, and I hope he does. You're right about that, because it's just too much good stuff to have be left in the dollar boxes, I think, at this point. Have you talked with Azzarello and, or Brubaker, and then really talked about, you know, what you guys are reading, whatever, Rucka, I'll throw Rucka in there as well, Bendis maybe?
Yeah, I've only met Greg Rucka briefly. Brubaker and Azzarello, I know fairly well. I've probably spent more time talking with Azzarello. And actually, the very first time I met Azzarello, I think it was in San Diego. This was after I'd signed to do The Other Side, but I don't think I had anything out yet. No, The Other Side wasn't even being drawn yet, because that was the same convention where I first met Cameron Stewart before he went to Vietnam.
Okay.
It's the same show. You know, this is me, like, fresh off the banana boat, kind of crazy-eyed, like, Jesus Christ, like, how did I can't believe I got this editor at Vertigo to buy my pitch, and here I am, first time I've ever been to San Diego Con, and Will Dennis takes, you know, his guys out to dinner, so I'm sitting at dinner with Brian Vaughn and Brian Azzarello, and I'm like, holy shit, this is crazy. And Azzarello, I had seen at panels before, and you know his demeanor. He comes across very no-nonsense. So yeah. I might use another word to describe that.
You could use that word, but he's a good guy. We know it. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, I love Brian. He's a pussycat once you get to know him.
Absolutely.
So this is the first... I mean, obviously, I'm scared shitless meeting these guys. And Brian kind of starts giving me the third degree because I was just starting to pitch Scalped. And he was grilling me about the ending. Like, what's your ending? Tell me your ending. You got your ending nailed down. So So here I am on the spot, and I'm like, Jesus, I don't even know. I'm still trying to figure out the fucking beginning, let alone the ending. So he's giving me shit like, you gotta, like, I don't know what you're doing. You gotta have your ending, you know, nailed down before you, you know, pitch any of this shit. Which he was right, which I quickly did. I figured out, you know, not necessarily the exact events of our ending, but character-wise, I know where everybody's going to wind up, and that, you know, that was the best thing I could have done, because that, you know, I don't know exactly how we're going to get there in some places, but as long as you know where you're going, you're okay.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that was my first experience with Azzarello, but since then, I, you know, he and I talk every once in a while, and, you know, I always love bouncing things off Brian or getting Brian's opinion, because when you ask Brian his opinion, you're going to get his opinion. he's not going to bullshit you about anything, which
Absolutely.
Is great. Like, some people, that rubs them the wrong way, but that's so refreshing in that you're going to get the straight shit from him when you ask him.
Very cool. Any of the old guard, have you had anyone come up and say they like Scout, like a Starenko or somebody like that?
Oh, Jesus, no, I've never, I would crap my pants if that happened.
Because I think that's where Brian gets his vibe from in some ways, because Tim Bradstreet was telling me about a time in San Diego a few years ago when Starenko was like, Azzarello, come with me for a second. And he got up, and it was around all the other guys, and he put his arm around him, and then just loud enough for everyone to hear, he goes, let me tell you what I don't like about 100 Bullets.
I'm always surprised when I meet anybody whose work I'm a fan of that they've heard of me at all. It's always kind of shocking. One of the biggest thrills of my professional career was that I'm the world's biggest Grant Morrison fan. Like, most people, when I tell them that, are surprised, and that you don't see, you know, a lot of Grant Morrison influence in my work, obviously. But I love Grant Morrison. Doom Patrol, Animal Man, you know, those books had a profound influence on me. I spent, after reading his Doom Patrol when it was coming out, I spent years in college writing really bad version of that sort of stream of consciousness stuff he was doing then. Like, everything I did was written like that. So, huge Grant Morrison fan, and I'd had a couple brushes with him where we were sitting near each other at dinner, or I'd see him at such and such, and never had the guts to go up and, you know, say hi, because I figure he's not going to know who the hell I am. And I'll just be a guy gushing about how much I love his work. But I was at the New York Comic Con last year. This is the last day, is like an hour or so before the show closed, and I'm just kind of wandering around the DC booth with nothing to do, and I see Grant just sitting down to do a signing. So I was like, well, fuck it, this is my one chance to say hi. And I get one of the DC PR guys just to introduce us, and it turns out he loves Scout. He reads Scout and enjoys it. So that was a huge thrill.
That's cool.
And I couldn't understand everything he was saying to me, but I was hoping it was all good. It was a little bit of the accent, and plus I was just sitting there thinking, like, holy shit, this is Grant Morrison.
That's fantastic, man. That's great.
That was a huge thrill. But what? Yeah, meeting any of these guys is just, I'm still, you know, a nerdy fanboy at heart, so it's a huge thrill meeting guys and ladies I'm such a big fan of.
What is it about Grant's work that you really admire, if you could quantify it?
I don't know, just the, the early stuff just, you know, leapt off the page, and it was so different from anything else that I was reading comic-wise back then. It just grabbed me and, you know, sort of blew my mind, sort of like that, you know, that demarcation point when you could tell where the Beatles discovered mind-altering drugs. That was kind of me with Grant Morrison. I don't know, just the just the mad ideas of everything he does, and you know, a guy who can do some of the craziest, most batshit off the wall ideas, but still, in the midst of all that, you're getting a rock solid story. So, I've always been a huge Morrison fan, and coming up later this year, I can't talk about what it'll be or what it'll involve, but I should get my chance to play with a couple of Morrison toys in the Marvel Universe.
Interesting.
We'll see. It's still in the early stages, but and that'll be terrifying once it's one of those things that's so exciting to pitch and put together, but then you sit down and you're like, oh shit, I gotta write this. And suddenly I'll be terrified. It's like when I did Hellblazer. That was so exciting to pitch and think about and put together. And then I sat down and was writing my first issue. And, you know, John Constantine doesn't show up until like the very end of my first issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to that point. It was a breeze writing those first, you know, 21 pages, 20 pages, whatever. And I get to the end and it's like I hit the brakes because I realized, like, I got to write dialogue for the character created by Alan Moore. Like, are you kidding me? And I was the second American to ever write the, that book. So that was like a moment of terror. But I think those moments of terror are good. I think, hopefully, like, I think when you get to the point, maybe when you don't have those, that's when maybe you need to stop and reflect a little bit. But...
Did you have any?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You finish. You finish your thought.
I was going to say I was still very proud of those couple issues of Hellblazer, even though. I mean, there's like a hardcore group of Hellblazer fans, which I wasn't really aware of before I did those. And then they're like Marvel zombies, but for Hellblazer.
Uh huh.
And most of these guys hate the Azzarello run, which to me. I love that stuff.
Me too.
That was one of my favorite runs of Hellblazer, and that was I started picking those up before I was reading 100 Bullets. So that's the book that first made me an Azzarello fan. But these guys do not look favorably upon that run, and part of it is because, you know, Az was like the Jackie Robinson of Hellblazer writers,
breaking the American barrier.
Exactly. So he made it a little bit easier for me, even though I got some shit too. And,
that's all.
I was really glad that I got to do those. It was a big thrill. That's one of the times I freaked out my wife. I usually know if I'm working on something, I tell my wife about it, and she seems horrified that I'm onto something good. So she was home from work that day, and I was writing the page where the guy has intercourse with a dead dog carcass. And I was so giddy that I had just written, you know, 5 panels of a guy fucking a dead dog that I had to tell her about this, and she was pretty horrified.
Did you sleep on the couch that night?
No. Well, she knew I was getting paid to write it, so that was okay. If I was just sitting around on my free time writing shit about guys fucking dead dogs, that would probably be different. But I think if it's like, hey, this dead dog that got fucked here helped pay the light bill, you know, then that's okay.
I'm glad you tell that story, because I was thinking about this earlier today, where I'm like, you come up with some really crazy scenarios that... You know, along with the realism, there's just good, you know, strange ideas that are very inventive. And, I mean, we're seeing it in Ghost Rider, we're seeing it in Wolverine, and I mentioned how much I loved Wolverine 50.
56, you mean the Howard Chaykin one?
Yeah, the Chaykin, was it 56?
Yeah, 56.
Okay, I thought it was, I for some reason thought it was the 50th issue, but okay, that was awesome. I mean, it was just crazy. And for people who haven't read it, I, you know, find it. It's in the trade at this point, isn't it? Has it been traded yet?
Yeah, it's in the trade's called The Death of Wolverine. It's in there with the Mark Guggenheim arc that came right after that.
There you go. It's great, and I'm like, you know, I don't know if on the one hand, you either got a great inventive mind, or I don't know if I want to ride in a van with you at midnight.
I like giving off the vibe that I'm a scary guy. I'm kind of big and bald head, got a big bushy beard, but I like giving off that vibe. When I first started talking to Axel Alonso, if you haven't met Axel Alonso, he's a big dude.
Yes, he is.
For a comic book.
Yes, he is.
And he told me that whenever he meets new guys, he always kind of sizes them up as to whether or not, you know, can I kick this guy's ass if it comes down to it. If it's, you know, Thunderdome, am I going to walk out alive? And he said most always he felt pretty confident, you know, that the answer would be yes. He could take, you know, he could take whoever it was. But with me, he said he wasn't sure, which is probably the nicest thing he's ever said to me, that he wasn't quite sure he would kick my ass, which is also a gross miscalculation and judgment because I'm quite certain that he could. But I like him thinking that maybe he couldn't. So yeah, I'm actually a pretty easygoing guy.
Very cool. There you go. Well, I've noticed that at cons when we've been able to talk, and it's an interesting contrast to what you write. But that's great. And again, that just shows how inventive you are when you're coming up with your scenarios. Before I get off of Wolverine, because there's so much to talk about, man, everyone I think is really excited about what you got coming up with Garney on Wolverine Weapon X. Give people the bullet points without obviously spoiling in terms of what they should be looking for.
I think the main thing to know about the series is that I patterned it after, structure-wise, I patterned it after Garth Ennis's run on Punisher Max. Not content-wise, this is not a mature reader's book. But in terms of the structure, I mean, I, what I love about that Garth Ennis run is that, you know, you got, what, 60 or so issues, all of pretty standalone arcs. Like, I think you could pick up any volume of that run and read it and enjoy it. Now, there may be characters in it who had popped up in a previous arc, but you're still going to get everything you need to know in that arc. And that's what I want to do with Wolverine. This is a continuity light book. We're not going to see, you know, flashbacks. We're not going to see characters popping up from his past. This is all going to be about new villains, new challenges, and telling relatively standalone stories. Now, we'll still have, you know, we'll be creating a bit of our own continuity. We'll have a couple of recurring supporting characters. And, you know, we'll be developing Wolverine's character as much as we can. But still, I want a book that somebody who enjoys the movie can walk out of the theater and pick this up and jump right into it. Somebody who has never read Wolverine can pick it up and jump right in. But also people who are, you know, big X-Men, big Wolverine fans will pick it up and still enjoy it. So that's the idea for the series as a whole. And we'll be doing very different kind of genres. Just like, you know, if you look at the Wolverine stuff I've done previous, like that issue 56 is a gritty little character drama where Wolverine's, you know, like a secondary character. He's not the focus, really. Then Get Mystique was like adrenaline-fueled, you know, revenge story, mm-hmm. chase scene. And then the Manifest Destiny miniseries was a straight-up, you know, kung fu love letter. So just like those things are very different, that's what I want to do from arc to arc in this book. So the first arc is, you know, kind of Black Ops tale, which we've obviously seen before with Wolverine.
Sure.
With this, we're getting a new group of villains who are, you know, carry over the legacy of the Weapon X program, but all new group of villains there. Basically, the files from the Weapon X program have fallen into the hands of a private military contractor, you know, which is something military contractors we've obviously seen a lot in the news the last few years.
You bet.
So in this case, they've use these files to create a whole squad of Wolverines, basically. Guys with adamantium-laced bones, with techno-organic healing factors, and with their own version of Wolvie's claw. So, Logan's obviously not too happy about this, and so they wind up facing off in the jungles of Colombia, and that, you know, will take us a lot of different places as he's trying to put these guys away. But after that, the second arc, we're going to jump right into the middle of a straight-up horror story. Very different in terms of tone, and again, be all new villains and all new challenges. And going forward, that'll be the, you know, that'll be the what I'll be trying to do with each and every arc. Just give something to give people a little bit, something a little bit different. Although you've still got Wolverine, who's sort of this rock solid core of the book.
Where do you go for your research? I mean, is it all just the internet? I mean, are you reading a bunch of newspapers as they die out? I mean, military contractors, I think, is going to be very interesting to explore just that culture. You know, the same could be said of your research into, you know, the Indian reservation culture and that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I have a pretty big book collection that I've assembled over the years. Like with the research for Scalped was something. Just like with the Vietnam War, those were kind of books I'd been assembling over the course of several years, because of stuff I'd been interested in for a long time. So that made it a lot easier in terms of research, and then I didn't have to seek out as much. You know, I didn't have to start from nothing. But one thing that's also great is once you start doing stuff like that, like with Scalped, then all of a sudden I get a lot of people who start contacting me and giving me information, which is great. Same thing when I was, you know, the other side kind of grew from me researching my cousin's life, who was a vet and novelist. And once I got a website out there, then suddenly I had people from all over the world who knew him contacted me, which makes things, you know, obviously a whole lot easier. So I don't know. It's hard to imagine doing my job without the internet.
Well,
the Dark Ages having to function and do the same thing I do without having that access right at your fingertips.
We talked about your cousin in our first interview, and for people who haven't heard that interview, certainly it's waiting for you at warballoon.com. But also, while Jason is here now, you can tell him the novel that your cousin is famous for.
He's most famous for The Short Timers, which is what Full Metal Jacket was based on. But he also wrote a sequel to that called The Phantom Blooper. And unfortunately, both of those are out of print. You can find a lot of copies online on eBay and such. Phantom Blooper is a little pricier because there's just one hardcover edition, and that was it. But I would encourage anybody who's into Vietnam War fiction to seek both of those out, because his Short Timers, when it came out, was held by critics universally as one of, if not the best, work of fiction about the Vietnam War. It's an incredible book, and the best stuff from Full Metal Jacket comes straight out of the book, though the movie, especially the last third of the movie, is radically different from the book.
Very cool.
But Gus, in terms of research, I took a great bit of advice from Gus, and that he had a letter he wrote to the U.S. Customs Office when he was working on the script for Full Metal Jacket. He moved to England to work on it.
With Kubrick?
Yeah.
Wow.
And shipped a ton of books over there with him. He had a massive book collection, thousands and thousands of books. Unfortunately, several of them were stolen from libraries across the country, which he later did time in jail for.
Oh,
he liked to say they were just really overdue. But the courts of San Luis Obispo, California, saw it differently. But he wrote this letter to the U.S. Customs Office and said he was explaining why he needs such a vast amount of books to, you know, shipped over to England. And he said that in there that he needed these books because he was working on this movie, and that the secret of good writing was stealing your ideas from as wide a variety of sources as possible. So that's why he needed such a huge amount of books. So I think that's always good advice for writers. Like, I like stealing from the Bible. That's always good because you're not going to get sued. The Bible and Shakespeare, I think you're pretty safe. I think those are in the public domain. I'm not sure.
You know, if Sonny Bono were still alive, I'm sure that would be his next move in Congress, was to extend the copyright even further. But yeah, you know, and that's no BS, folks, if you didn't know. That is the Sonny Bono Act, literally, that extended the copyright and kept things from, like, Mickey Mouse and Superman from falling into the public domain.
Yeah, was it mainly Disney that was pushing for that?
Well, I don't want to smack your employers around at all, but I can understand. But yeah, I think Warner's as well. But you're right. I believe the main thrust was about Mickey Mouse. Yeah. So, and I can see it.
Yeah,
certainly.
The Bible though is not included in that.
No, no.
Totally wide open. Rip it off all you want.
But you've also got coming up. This two-part story with one of the Kubert brothers. Is it Adam?
Yeah.
I was reading the tease on that, and that sounded interesting. Tell people about that story.
I wanted to make a story point out of the fact that Wolverine is popping up in so many books each month, which, of course, is the main complaint that everybody on the Internet has about Wolverine. Well, he's in too many books. He's in the Avengers and the X-Men, and he's got all these solo books. This is just crazy. I wanted to address that and make a story point of that and say, well, why is that? Why is this guy pushing himself so hard that he's in all these different groups? He's got to be working himself ragged, crisscrossing the country, changing costumes all the time. Like, why is he doing this to himself? So the story, it's basically one 22-page story, but it's broken in half, and it'll run half an issue in Wolverine 73 and half in 74. And it's sort of like a week in the life or so of Wolverine. So we'll see him on Monday he's with the Avengers. On Tuesday he's, hanging with Cyclops. On Wednesday night, he's fighting with X-Force. And then we'll be addressing why he does this to himself. Is there a reason?
Have the Wolverine fans been as tough on you as the Hellblazer fans?
Probably not.
I'm guessing.
Fans were tougher.
Say that again.
I think the Hellblazer fans were tougher. Actually,
okay.
That was a tougher audience. No, I think the response to the Wolverine stuff I've done so far has been great.
Very cool.
Obviously Marvel's thrilled her since they gave me this ongoing series. I think I'm still introducing myself to a lot of the Marvel fans, so I'm kind of still figuring out who I am. So, yeah, this Weapon X will obviously be the biggest thing I've done in terms of sales and spotlight and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel really good about what we're doing on it. I think this will be the best arc of any superhero story I've ever written. So hopefully it'll be a great intro for, people who've never picked up anything else I've done.
Well, that's cool, man. I hope that you have the ride that Fraction has had with Iron Man. I mean, I think that was kind of the breakthrough mainstream book that really got people excited about Matt. Mm-hmm. And, I think the same might be said if things go well with Weapon X. I think that will be cool. Although, you've already had your few big moments already superhero-wise. I think people really enjoyed the Secret Invasion arc that you had for Black Panther.
Yeah, that's probably the thing that I hear the most about in terms of superhero stuff. People really seem to have enjoyed that arc. And, I got to thank Axel Alonso really for my entire career at Marvel. Without him, I don't think I'd be at Marvel, because he's the guy who, read my Vertigo stuff and brought me in and set me up in all these different spots where I could kind of, step up to plate and hit a home run and walk off. put me up with, Get Mystique, with Ron Garney, and just came to me and said, I need you to do a story with Wolverine going after Mystique. I was like, cool, I could do that. Came to me with Black Panther and said, you know, Wakanda versus Skrulls. I was like, awesome, I can do that. So, you know, it's I think that's one of the things that's so great about Axel. I mean, you know, Fraction is another example of a guy he brought in and brought along. He's great about looking at guys and seeing their possibilities or their strengths and then putting them in position to succeed, as opposed to just saying, well, hey, I like what this guy does, but let me take him and put him on something, you know, over here that's completely different, but I need a writer to fill this slot. Like, he doesn't do that. He's very particular about how he brings guys along, especially, you know, new writers that you want to, you know, you can ruin guys by putting them on the wrong things and having things flop and kind of take their legs out from under them before they have a chance. So feel very, very comfortable in Axel's hands being brought along through Marvel. And you know, I mean, he's got most of all the characters I want to do are in his office, so I'm lucky in that hopefully I'll be hanging around for quite a while to come. I'll be doing another book for him later in the year once I'm done with Ghost Rider, too.
Do you see yourself ever writing a team book?
Yeah, I would love to write a team book. I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready to do that. Really, what I'm doing in my last arc of Ghost Rider is going to seem a lot more like a team book. The book is actually relaunching, or the last arc will be a mini series, whichever way you want to look at it, and it'll be titled Ghost Riders, plural.
Oh wow!
Heaven's on fire.
Which of course it is.
Which of course is one of my favorite Kiss songs. And that's going to feature not only Johnny Blaze and Danny Ketch, our two Ghost Riders, but also the new version of Caretaker that I introduced. She'll be a big character in it. Son of Satan, I'm bringing him in.
Excellent.
He'll be a big part of it, which is a character that I've been aching to write ever since I first took over Ghost Rider. And also bringing in Jane Cutter, which was a character from Warren Ellis's run on Hellstorm. She was Damon Hellstorm's girlfriend for a while, and she's an occult terrorist who's got a gun called the Breathing Gun, which looks kind of like Freddy Krueger's chest. It's all kind of burned flesh, and it shoots these sentient bullets that kill demons and angels. So she's pretty awesome. She hasn't popped up, I don't think, at all since Ellis created her. So, you know, that, I mean, that's a big group of characters, obviously, but they'll be throughout the entire miniseries. So this is probably as close to a team book as I'll have done. And it's great because you're talking about a nun, the son of Satan, and a cult terrorist who's pissed at the son of Satan because they broke up on bad terms. And these two Ghost Rider brothers who hate each other after what happened in the previous arc.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of put all these people in the same room together and just kind of let sparks fly. That shit kind of writes itself. But not to mention that the whole storyline kind of starts with the revelation that Zadkiel, who's our renegade angel character who has taken over the city of heaven, he's conquered heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer he holds that, the more powerful he becomes. Well, he's now trying to kill the Antichrist. We see in the first issue that there are these groups of Satanists have been working for years to breed the Antichrist. So they're taking, you know, murderers and rapists and psychopaths and politicians and breeding them to create the perfect Antichrist. So they've got all these babies and young children who are potentials. So Zadkiel's showing up, wants to wipe all these kids out, because if he eliminates the Antichrist, then it you know, kind of throws biblical prophecy out the window. The Book of Revelations is mute, and Zadkiel can rewrite history, rewrite the future however he wants. So we put all of our characters in the position of having to save this kid who's the Antichrist in order to save the world. And that's really the jumping off point for the whole story. Then we also throw in this sort of all-star squadron of Ghost Rider villains who are coming together to take down the Ghost Riders once and for all. So I get to write the orb again, the guy with the giant eyeball for a head.
Mm-hmm.
And also another big thrill was I got to bring back one of my favorite villains. I may be the only person. Master Pandemonium. Do you remember Master Pandemonium?
I do not.
he was one of the main villains from the West Coast Avengers book.
Now your blog made sense when you referred to those West Coast Avenger issues recently.
Well, I had all the covers from Master Pandemonium on there.
There you go.
He's a guy with demons for arms.
Very cool.
So, I mean, how has that guy not popped up in Ghost Rider already? That's like a natural. So it was a big thrill to bring that guy back, and we'll be seeing him in a few different issues over the course of that mini. So basically, this is like these six issues will wrap up my 2 years on Ghost Rider. So I'm just trying to throw as much crazy shit as I can in the mix before I, walk off. I don't want to leave any bullets in my holster. I'm going to leave it all in the field.
Attaboy, in the pits of hell.
That's right.
Is Tony writing the last arc with you as well, or who's the artist?
So Roland Boschke's doing
okay.
The last six. He did my first arc on the book, and he did the Punisher Christmas special that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy whose stuff has just gotten better and better each issue he's done, and it's looking great. He redesigned Son of Satan. He's got a new look for him. He's getting to redesign Master Pandemonium, and a lot of the villains we're bringing in. So his stuff is looking really great. But yeah, Tony is doing just three issues, 33, 35, and super proud of those. I think it's the best stuff Tony's maybe ever done. It looks amazing. But he's been waiting to draw Ghost Rider since he was like 6 years old. So he's been pouring everything he's got into these issues, and I've just been trying to give him as much as many deformities and crazy Ghost Riders and just madcap shit to draw as I can.
Well, you succeeded because from the trucker Ghost Rider and that good kind of White Line Fever or Smokey and the Bandit moment to the World War One stuff, and it reminded me of the same thing that has made Iron Fist fun lately.
Yeah.
In terms of just like this legacy that we haven't seen beyond Danny and Johnny. So that's very cool, man. Tony has been doing a great job, I, as he always does, and it's been fun seeing you guys work together. And this arc sounds cool that's coming up. That's great. And I was even going to say, too, that even though they're not a team, Scalped, with its many characters, gives you the opportunity to, I think you've got that multi-star dynamic in the book. So that, I would think you are kind of ready to try and do a team book, and what you're describing obviously sounds like a team book as well.
All that said, I don't have a team book on my horizon.
Okay.
I think, this year's, rest of this year is already mapped out. Obviously I hope to have a nice long run on Wolverine Weapon X, finishing up Ghost Rider. And later in the year, I'll be taking over another ongoing title. So, going forward for the next couple of years, probably you'll see me focusing on a couple of longer term runs, as opposed last year I did a lot of short runs, like
mm-hmm.
we talked about Wolverine and Black Panther and Hellblazer. So, at this point, I'm trying to settle in on a couple of longer term things. So, I'll still be doing little things here and there, like I'm doing this Iron Fist one-shot, focusing on the Immortal Weapons who were introduced during Fraction and Brubaker's run,
mm-hmm.
And I'm doing Fat Cobra.
Excellent.
Yeah, and this is basically the origin story of Fat Cobra, so I got to write pretty much everything about this guy, because we don't really know much at all about him other than he's fat, he's a great fighter, and he enjoys his winches of waiting. I think that's about pretty much all we knew about the guy, so I got to fill in all these other details, and that was a lot of fun. It was great to play in that, you know, in that sandbox, because I'm obviously a big fan of the of what Brubaker and Fraction did on the book, and what, you know, Dwayne Straczynski has continued. I love that series, so it was a big thrill to get to play around in that a little bit.
That's great. That's great. And yeah, I think just like Dwayne, I think you're another good fit for that series as well, so that's going to be fun. Have you had a chance to really talk to Dwayne? Because he's another crime writer that I think, his novels are just fantastic. I've really enjoyed reading his stuff.
Yeah, I've read, I must admit, the only one of his books I've read was Severance Package, which I guess is the newest one. I really enjoyed that. And I've got already picked up a couple of his others. I just haven't had a chance to read them. But yeah, I've talked to Dwayne a little bit. We've met, you know, at a few cons, and I actually called him and talked to him on the phone a little bit when I was working on Fat Cobra, just to make sure I wasn't stepping on his toes with anything. Super nice guy. Which I don't know. Maybe I've just been really lucky with the guys I've met in comics, but I haven't. I wouldn't tell you any names, but I haven't met any guys who I would just like, oh, that guy's a total asshole.
Well, it's good.
I mean, I obviously came in, as just a sort of fanboy who kind of stumbled his way into comics, and I'm meeting all these guys I was such huge fans of, and, you know, God, you'd just be so deflated if you meet these guys and find out they're total dicks. But, you know, all these guys at Vertigo I've met, Brian Wood, Azzarello, Brian Vaughn, just such welcoming, warm-hearted guys. Like, you know, just happy to welcome you aboard, like you're part of the team. There's no sort of like, you know, who the fuck is this guy? Maybe they do that when I'm not around, but certainly to my face, they... super nice guys, and just, you know, I mean, that's so much fun. It's so much fun to have kind of stumbled your way into this sort of family of comic guys, and, you know, guys like Fraction and Rick Remender, getting to know those guys, and so for all of us to have kind of started to come up the ladder at Marvel at the same time has been a big thrill.
Well, and it's...
I still think those guys suck.
Well, you know, yeah, of course. And,
but, you know.
They can't all be you, man. That's all right. No, I agree with you. And it's interesting to see that you guys are all high-concept guys and have very individual styles and are able to, again, and I guess it's the credit goes to guys like Axel Alonso and good editors that know to bring your voice to Marvel and not turn you into a house guy with a little flavor of what you do. I'm glad to see that, you know, your voice is still your voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds so simple, that simple concept of take, you know, a writer who shows that he can do this well and take him and put him on something where he can continue to do that. I don't think, not everybody does that. I think some people might try to fit, you know, that square peg in a round hole sometimes. You're not going to get the best work. So I've been incredibly fortunate with the editors I've worked with. I think coming into Vertigo under Will Dennis, you know, who was the guy who kind of took over Axel Alonso's job when Axel went to Marvel.
Yep.
So coming up under Will, you know, that's when I learned to write. I mean, doing the other side and Scalp Ed, no fucking idea of what I was doing in terms of writing comics or working with an artist. I owe everything to Will. I wouldn't have a comic career if Will Dennis hadn't taken the time to read my script, you know, and saw something in it. So Will, between Will and Axel, you know, those are the two guys I've done most of my stuff with. And I mean, it's kind of kismet that I ended up with the two guys who really, if I could have just had my pick of any editor in comics, said, who do you want to work with? I would have picked these two guys.
That's really cool.
I'm not sure. I don't know how the hell I did that or made that happen. But it's funny with Axel. You know, I won this Marvel Talent Search contest in 2008, 2001 and did a Wolverine story. So I kind of, that's when I first started to pitch things. I got a couple email addresses at Marvel, and, you know, I was pitching Punisher and Wolverine and Captain America and whatever I could think of. And I was pitching stuff to Axel just over email. I'd never met him, but, you know, we'd exchange emails every once in a while. I'd never got anywhere. And, you know, then I got the other side picked up by Vertigo and kind of went off and was just focusing on Vertigo stuff. And so once the other side, Scalp, came out, I sent copies of those to Axel, and then he called me up and offered me work. Had no memory whatsoever of the fact that just a few months or a year before, I was pitching him stuff like crazy.
Interesting.
So then I was just some guy that, you know, he'd never heard of. He had no idea who I was. So I give him shit about that every once in a while.
Well, that's got to be cool, though, having a wonderful artist, as you had, too, with Cameron Stewart and RM as well, to... you know, bring your stories to light, because I can appreciate that. That just shows you, too, people who are trying to pitch. I mean, it's, you really, you know, the editors need to see it, need to see the full picture to really understand sometimes. So,
I mean, yeah, a guy like Axel is getting so many pitches each day from guys he's never heard of. I was just another one of those dudes. But once I went off and showed that I could kind of tell my own stories, then those are the guys he's looking for to bring to Marvel. You know, he brought Fraction to Marvel because of The Last of the Independents.
And yep.
Brought Rick in because of, you know, stuff like Fear Agent.
You bet.
So, yeah, I mean, there's so many guys, young writers out there who are want to break into Marvel. They want to write X-Men or Spider-Man. You know, and I always just tell people, like, you don't. I can't think of any guy who broke into comics pitching Spider-Man or Wolverine. You know, you got to go show that you can do your own stuff and have your own voice, and those are the guys that they seek out to write for Marvel.
What did Will Dennis tell you that, or what areas of writing for comics, you know, I know you said in terms of working with an artist, but like, how else would you quantify what he was able to give you?
I think what's great about Will is that he does all the hard work up front. Like the pitch for Scalped, we went over and over and over in that. I wrote so many different variations of that pitch and the proposal, and, you know, we banged on that story forever before I'd ever written a word of the book. And even those first few issues were really hard. But... you know, once you get going, kind of you've done so much of that hard work from the beginning that you get on track pretty quickly and things get so much easier. And you know, as you go forward, Will's one of those guys who's got like a great like laser-like focus that he's not going to edit something just to put his fingerprints on it. That when he gives you criticism or suggests changes, it's almost always something that I had thought about before to begin with, or had a question about. We just seem to always kind of be on the same page. So it's great, and I think Scalped is the book it is because of Will and Gera. I don't know what the book would be like if I had done it somewhere else with a different artist. I think kind of Will's focus and Gera's just manic energy and passion are what has made the book much better than I, you know, could have made it myself.
Well, the current arc it's been very interesting, and I'm looking forward to its completion. And everything you got coming from Marvel, really, it's Ghost Rider's been a very good ride, and it sounds like it's going to wrap up in a very fun way and give the next creative team an interesting position to launch from. And, the Wolverine stuff sounds great too, man. I mean, it's as you said, I'm a big fan of that Garth Ennis Max series. And, And I do think Wolverine is at its best when it is, you know, presented in that sort of way. So that's going to be kind of fun to see. So nice going, man.
I think it'll, you know, people complain about there being too many Wolverine books, but I think, you know, all I'm concerned with is that my book has its own identity. So I think you look at Wolverine Origins and Weapon X, and they're two very different books. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, Daniel Way is doing a lot to explore Wolverine's history and laying out the periods of that, and you know, bringing all the cool stuff from Wolverine's past, and that's great. And you know, and then you could read his book and enjoy that, and without reading mine, or the other way around. You know, you can have your pick, and I think that's the main thing that I'm concerned with is, you know, making my book as good as it can be and giving it its own identity.
Well, and like The Punisher, you know, you got Remender writing the Marvel Universe version of The mm-hmm. Punisher, and then there's still room for the Max book, and I agree. Yeah. I think Wolverine is equally that kind of character, and it's going to be interesting. Were you given any sneaks? I guess we should acknowledge the movie that's coming very shortly.
There's a movie?
Yeah. I, honestly, man, in a good way, because I think Hugh Jackman does a fine job with the character, but it really is its own animal, obviously, and but I have to admit, I am, you know, looking forward, I'm still looking forward to the film. I think Jeff Katz is the right guy to write a movie, a comic book movie, so I think that'll be fun. And were you shown much in preparation for the movie? Like, did you get to see a sneak, or did you see a script or anything?
Now, they talked at one point about flying me up to read the script, but that never materialized. But, you know, Fraction never saw Iron Man. He had no inside info on Iron Man.
That's true.
He sat down to write his book. So with this, you know, I kind of knew what I wanted to do with the series. And we brought in, like, Maverick, you know, who's a character in the film. He fit the perfect slot for me to use him as a recurring character in the series. So, you know, and the first arc obviously deals with the legacy of the Weapon X program. So if you're somebody who goes to see the movie and picks this book up, there will be elements, you know, you would recognize from the film. But, I mean, that's about the extent of us consciously trying to put any connections to the movie.
Okay.
There'll be lots of stabbing in the book. I assume there's stabbing flashing in the movie. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so, but I'm guessing.
I think that's a fair bet. Okay.
And the best part of them doing the movie is that I get toys like this.
I'm the best there is in what I do.
I'm going to have this with me every Wolverine script I write for the rest of my life. If I just get stuck, I'm just going to press this guy's belly, and he
spouts dialogue.
Wolverine goodness. He's got the snick sound. He's got it all.
That's I heard that snicked. That was very good. Jesus, man. Hey, I should mention it because I was over at your blog today, and I scrolled down, and I saw the student film of Scalped, and I thought that was very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very cool. Yeah, it's the first thing I've ever seen like that, as far as I know, the very first adaptation of Scout. Even though they changed quite a bit for their adaptation, that was still really cool.
I wonder if that was like a class assignment, because Brian Bendis just tweeted about a Jessica Jones scene. That looks like a fan film or whatever, and you know, really good quality. And I'd say the same thing for the Scalp thing. So Jason has been kind enough to put it on his blog. I just want people to be able to see it and check it out. So give him your URL for your blog.
JasonAaron.info. I think Brian Wood has posted several student films. I think mostly of demo on the blog that he and I share at standardattrition.com. I don't know. I don't know if they're all connected somehow, or just you know, an easy source of script for somebody who wants to shoot a scene.
Well, as always, I look forward to our next convention where I see you. But regardless, I'll try not to wait as long as I did last time, and have you back to talk about some of the new stuff you got coming. But as always, Jason, it's great stuff, and I'm happy to talk to you. And always look forward to reading new product every month. from Jason Aaron. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks, John.
A nice talk with Jason Aaron. Always happy to talk with him, and make sure you check out his books on the Rex. Scalp from Vertigo, Wolverine Weapon X, Ghost Rider, and soon the Fat Grover Run Shot, all coming from Marvel Comics later on this year. Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where they offer a variety of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, archives, absolute editions. If it's been collected, InStock Trades has it. I shouldn't forget original graphic novels as well. All at savings of 35% off the regular cover price or more. And if you order $50 or more from InStockTrades.com of merchandise, the shipping is free. Some recent Jason Aaron product that is available at InStockTrades.com, one of the collections we talk about in our conversation, his work on Secret Invasion Black Panther. A great story. The standard retail price is $12.99. At InStockTrades.com, just $8.18. How about the Death of Wolverine premium hardcover with the movie coming out? A perfect time to order that. Standard retail price $19.99 at InStockTrades.com, $12.59. You can go back to Jason's first project for Vertigo, The Other Side, a great story with Cameron Stewart, a wonderful Vietnam story we discuss in our conversation. Standard retail price $12.99 at InStockTrades.com, $8.18. And you'll find Scalped, several volumes of Scalped. Several volumes of Scalped are available at InStockTrades.com. A bargain for Volume 1. The standard retail price is $9.99 at InStockTrades.com, $6.29. Don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. For all your pre-order monthly needs, you will find savings from 40 to 75% off selected items. For all the details, check out their websites, Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com, InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress reminding you, you can find Word Balloon all over the internet. Of course, our own website, wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Facebook, John Suntress, S-I-U-N-T-R-E-S, or on Twitter, John Word Balloon. And also, if you just want to look for us on iTunes, we're there. Wouldn't mind leaving a review. That would be great. And any questions or comments about the show, two places to go. There's our forum at wordballoon.com, hosted by Jinx World. And, of course, you can always email me, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.